This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Alison Milden.
Stuart Schwartz.
And Jane Bolton.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Stu, we've been talking about a lot of your activities in Palmerston North related to museums and your gallery and so on. But there's another dimension as well. The you're from a Jewish background, an active Jewish background?
That's
observant?
That's correct. My own background is basically I was bar mitzvahed in the conservative area of Judaism. My folks weren't necessarily big practicers, but one of the things a Jewish boy had to do was be bar mitzvahed. And so I went to services in Newark, New Jersey, and the rabbi there taught me what one has to know in order to be bar mitzvahed. But here in New Zealand, I mean, I came over with Phyllis, who's also raised as a conservative Jew, and a son who, strangely enough, was bar mitzvahed in the Orthodox synagogue, in this case in Savannah, Georgia.
So what's the difference between conservative and Orthodox?
Well, there are basically three levels within Judaism. You have the liberal, sometimes called progressive. They do a lot in English, etc. It's kind of the everyman's religion, I think. And then you have the conservative branch, which uses a little more Hebrew and a different prayer book. And then you have Orthodox. And I think the biggest difference in Orthodox is that basically men and women don't sit together. They're separate in ceremonies.
The women are upstairs?
It depends. If they got it upstairs, the women are upstairs. If not, they're separated. When we were home the last time, we went to a service Orthodox because my brother-in-law and sister-in-law in Cary, North Carolina, practice Orthodoxy. There basically was just a kind of wooden picket fence between the men and the women. And of course above that are the sects that you hear about and see about on television, particularly the Orthodox and Hasidic, who are basically ultra-Orthodox.
And there's Reform?
Reformed is basically the same these days as liberal or progressive. They don't use the Reformed title anymore at most places. Say again?
Do you speak Hebrew?
Do I speak Hebrew? No.
Oh. Okay. So what did the bar mitzvah involve?
Well, the bar mitzvah.
The bar mitzvah is when you turn 13,
it's
marking your transition to being a man.
That's exactly right. What that does is take you from being a boy to a man. It incorporates responsibilities within the Jewish community and within the temple or synagogue one belongs to. The bar mitzvah is a training to get you to that stage. You learn Hebrew. You learn section of the Torah.
Is it the Hebrew as spoken in Israel then, or is it?
It's the same Hebrew spoken in
the same pronunciation.
Not necessarily the same pronunciation, etc. But you could recognize it. As such. Okay. But the training that goes on for months to get you to be able to read Hebrew, and particularly the Torah. The Hebrew in the Torah doesn't have the little marks underneath it for
the vowel
pronunciation.
Markings,
yeah.
But you know from the context as to what, whether it's past or present tense.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
You know what the pronunciation
is. The other thing is you have to basically give a speech where you, for the most part, thank your parents, bringing you into the world and having you trained by this wonderful rabbi, et cetera, et cetera.
There was a TV play in Britain called Bar Mitzvah Boy. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
No, it's very entertaining, but it looks...
Oh, I'd be entertaining because it's humorous. A lot of things that one goes through, you know, like Fiddler on the Roof, has its humorous
Jewish
side.
Humor, yeah.
Absolutely.
When
and
do you
Jewish.
Wear a little cap? Is that when you get your little
keeper.
Cap?
Well,
you
get
a keeper is worn by male members of the congregation from any age.
Any age.
I mean, little babies have little ones that are basically knitted little things that sit on their head.
Yeah.
Women often, if they wish, could wear a kippah or a piece of lace attached to one's hair, etc.
Your head should be covered.
Your head should be covered when you're in a Jewish house of worship, or when you're participating in things like funerals.
Did Phyllis have a bat mitzvah, or weren't they common at that
No,
stage?
Phyllis had a bas mitzvah. Yeah, you basically it's the same thing except
for
different
girls. Different pronunciation.
Yeah, well,
bas,
it's a B-A-S,
bas,
bas,
or bat,
or
B-A-T.
Or B-A-T, yeah.
Yes.
And boys have bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, that's right.
But, essentially the same thing. It's coming of age.
One for,
You can also be confirmed. Now, I didn't know Phyllis when she was that age, so I think she may not have had a bas mitzvah, but she was confirmed, which basically is the same sort of thing. And you would take training as a group. The rabbi or one of the assistant rabbis or someone who's knowledgeable would teach Sunday school. Or, you know, Wednesday afternoons or whenever.
Sunday, not on Saturday then. They had it on Saturday.
Well, Saturday is the Sabbath.
Yes.
And you're not allowed to do work. And teaching is a work thing.
Okay.
I mean, if you wanted to be really orthodox on a Saturday, you hired somebody to turn the lights on in the morning.
Oh, that's right. In Eastern Europe, there were villages where certain non-Jewish people were designated to do that. But there were other ideas as well. Apparently, while you're not allowed to travel on the Sabbath, but you are allowed to travel over water. So I heard the idea that you put a bottle of water under your car seat and then it's okay to...
Well, I think there are a lot of ways that have been subjugated in order to make things happen. I mean, I know going to my brother-in-law's congregation, which is Orthodox, that... you would drive to a designated parking lot and then walk to the synagogue because you're not supposed to drive. It's work.
Mm.
Yes, but there was a place that was chained off, et cetera, for people to put their cars because they came from out of town. In the 17th, 16th, 17th, 18th century, people lived downtown and you walked everywhere, et cetera. So these days, you're coming from out of town, you would drive to town and then walk a certain distance to the synagogue to attend services.
Okay.
Can you fail to reach the required standard?
Oh, absolutely.
And what happens then?
Nothing. You're still Jewish, you don't have a bar mitzvah. And there are lots of people out there who have either chosen not to have bar mitzvahs, or for one reason or another, the war intervened, or they were sick, or whatever. You know,
Israel, there's a large secular Jewish community.
Yes. It's not a not a requirement, but it's a nice thing. And I'll tell you who. You do it for. You do it for your grandmother and grandfather and your parents.
And you get lots of presents, don't you?
Yes, that is a nice part of being bar mitzvahed or bas mitzvahed, is they give you gifts and they celebrate this event with you. which is very nice.
Yeah.
It's a bit like confirmation. It's exactly the same as confirmation. You have a new suit, or a dress, etc., and you have a party.
Yeah.
Wonderful party. Mm. Yeah, I gave bone marrow to a young man who was 6 at the time in 1992, May of 1992, and because it went very well, and it turned out that they were Jewish, we went to his bar mitzvah, went to his wedding. Because he was one of 4 siblings, we went to the bar mitzvahs of his 2 brothers, just something you do. I mean, it's not necessarily an excuse for a party, but the reality of it is that basically it takes a young boy and makes him a mensch, a man, and gives him the responsibility. Like, for instance, when you have a Jewish funeral, you have to have a minion, and that is basically 10 men who have been bar mitzvahed. So once you're bar mitzvahed, you can be put on the roster to attend as a part of the minion.
And the minion occurs how often and for how long?
Well, with a funeral, you're looking at probably a week every night, at least seven days, where the family gets together, and prayers are said, and you have a minion. Not necessarily to make it legal, but in Jewish terms, to make it happen.
But it carries on for about a year, to periodically.
Well, it can carry on for a long time. When you unveil a headstone, you'll also have a minion because prayers will be said.
Yeah. So it could be a nuisance, or it could be a way for the community to make sure that the family is coping okay after the death.
Yeah, absolutely. When you sit Shiva, basically, participate in the prayers for over the deceased, you do things like cover the mirrors in the house. And a minion will be there, prayers will be said, and then people will have coffee and cake afterwards, etc. And that can happen every night for, I think, at least a week. And then a year later, when they set the headstone, to basically do the same sort of thing for that day or two. And those elements are what a person is trained.
So you grew up in a Jewish community, and that was a large part of your life?
I grew up in a Jewish community in Newark, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. A very large Jewish community, very active, with my relatives for the most part, because my folks were from New York. We went into New York for celebrations and that sort of thing. We also went to partake of good Jewish food, like bagels and lox, whitefish.
Pickled herring?
And pickled herring, absolutely. And tagelok and all kinds of wonderful
gefilte
foods.
I mean, that's
one of the greatest. I always thought that, thank God, really, that I was born a Jew, because there's so many good things about being Jewish. I mean, among them, of course, is the strength of family and connections. But food, Jewish food, a lot of the world knows bagels that might not know the original connections, and I don't myself either know the original connections, but it's a Jewish food, and it's certainly, like bagels and lox.
It's interesting how these things evolve, though. I was watching just recently on Al Jazeera, the big, are the Jewish in Israel taking over falafel as one of their foods when really it's a Middle Eastern food? And the same with hummus, which is very common there. So you grew up in a Jewish community, and presumably your time before you came to New Zealand, you were staying in Jewish communities in various places.
Well, we've always been members of a synagogue or temple at one time or another. The last religious affiliation we had was with a very progressive little temple that broke away from the larger congregations in Charlotte and set themselves
Charlotte.
Up. Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
Set themselves up as a an independent and did things their way, and it was wonderful. Small groups, a lot of congregations, and I'm sure true in churches, you have cliques, you have people who want to do things one way or the other, etc. And you know, it's not any different in the Jewish community.
Were there strong youth activities around that?
Very strong youth activities. Phyllis and I were both had grown up with being B'nai Brithers and going to Jewish camps, etc. And when Phyllis, after Phyllis and I got married,
B'nai Brith. A Jewish organization,
exactly. And when Phyllis and I, after Phyllis and I got married, we were of course active in the temple because of our marriage. We were recruited to be advisors to a youth group, and we did that for number of years. Basically, shepherding youngsters to various.
Yeah. What programs. Was the youth group though?
Well, it was
B'nai Brith.
B'nai Brith.
Yeah.
Which is what? Can I interrupt? What's that?
It's an organization of like-minded folks with a religious bent. To I guess
it means son of B'nai means son of Brith. There's another one called Habonim, which means the builders.
Yeah, okay. So there are a couple of streams that you can. I mean, just like
different groups.
Within any youth groups, you've got Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. You've got Boys Brigade, Girls Brigade, etc. Yeah. Within the Jewish community, there's Habonim. It's B'nai Brith. There are other organizations.
Draw was one as well. Draw was another one in England.
Yeah.
Which means a word for freedom.
Yeah. But we, when I was growing up in Springfield, New Jersey, although we were very active in a very progressive synagogue, we had a rabbi who would preach fire and brimstone. I loved it. But the youth group wasn't that great, so we all joined the Catholic Youth Organization, CYO, because CYO had the best parties, and we were all friends because we were all in high school together.
What did the rabbi think if you were going to the Roman Catholic Church?
He didn't mind. I mean, as long as we weren't doing anything outrageous, you know, they hired the best bands and. Yeah.
So then when you came to New Zealand, that would have been a big difference compared to your
I mean, there'd never been, as far as I know, a temple or synagogue here in Palmerston North, but there was a Jewish community. And but the Jewish temple we joined, we went to attend services at the synagogue on Webb Street. And Webb Street in Wellington.
In Wellington. Yeah.
And then we also went to services, Temple Sinai, on Guzney Street in Wellington, just to feel them out. I mean, you got to be at home and feel it. But the Orthodox have this thing about women. And when we were introduced, Phyllis and I were introduced to the chief rabbi, he basically spoke to me and not to Phyllis. Shook my hand, didn't almost acknowledge Phyllis. And she got turned off by this, and I can understand. That's typical of Orthodoxy. But we were welcomed with open arms into Temple Sinai, and ultimately Phyllis and I became board members. We used to drive from Palmerston North after work, attend a 7:30 board meeting, and then at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night, turn around and drive back to Palmerston North. And we do that once a month, as well as go down on this Saturday morning when we could to attend services. But Temple Sinai is a lovely little building. It's an old, it's a house that's been converted to a temple. And one of the things that we did as board members is we took responsibility for looking after the what the Temple Sinai calls country members. People who were members of the temple but don't live in Wellington. Mm-hmm. And there was a list at one time of 55 people on that list from Hawke's Bay, Whanganui, to Waikanae. And Phyllis and I would call them, see if we could get them down to services, tell them what was going on, try to find information from them, and when they were, whatever they were celebrating, birthdays, etc., report that to the temple, so it would go in the newsletter, that sort of thing. And on a lot of occasions, the rabbi or the president of the temple would take a road trip and come up and hold services in the communities where folks live. So services in Whanganui, services in Napier, etc. So that folks would keep touch.
Did you find that people in those environments were sort of well informed on Judaism?
Oh yeah, better than I, for sure. Yes, there's a really, really good strength in those communities, and people who were active within their own faith, but realized that in order to attend ceremonies, they'd have to travel.
So it would be normal, say, for Jews in New Zealand to obey the dietary laws?
Like anywhere else, I think there are folks who keep kosher. You can buy kosher foods in one of the abattoirs in Dannevirke, I think it's a supplier.
If it's halal, then it's okay.
Well, in a lot of cases, Phyllis goes to the halal butcher.
Yeah,
because it's basically the same. It's kosher from the Arabian standpoint, But
matzah, now in Britain, I was surprised now you can buy matzah right through the year in the supermarkets.
Well, that would be in an area where there's a good amount of...
No. All over Britain. They go in the supermarkets. Because now it's another form of cracker that people like. Whereas here, it's very hard to... You've got to have your suppliers.
Yeah, there may be a new world on the down near Te Papa that has a year-round supply of matzah. Oh,
really?
The other thing... You want to keep kosher, is the kosher co-op. Okay. And there's one connected to the synagogue in Webb Street. And there's also one in Auckland as well.
I think basically, you can do mail order for some stuff from Hamilton, actually. Might have been Auckland.
Yeah, they basically stock foods for the holidays and special foods. And they have kosher meats. And kosher foods for people who are serious about keeping kosher. Phyllis and I have kept kosher for short periods of time, but the biggest problem is bringing these things up here. I mean, now with courier, you can get anything you want, but wasn't necessarily easy, and it's more expensive. You just have to realize that it's...
And it's sort of limiting if you want to socialize generally, then...
Yeah. I would say the majority of Jews don't keep kosher, but are certainly appreciative of those who do. And the younger generation, if they're interested enough, are willing to keep kosher and give it a try, and they do. And the older folks, because if they've kept kosher all their life, they continue to keep kosher.
That was something that interested me. You said that you were conservative, but your son, Bar Mitzvah, Orthodox.
Yeah.
Would that be his choice? What would have determined?
What determined that was because David suffers from Asperger's, which was not identified really till we got here, till Phyllis read something online or something and then it came across my desk. So David had trouble keeping on task, etc. And so it was recommended that in order to get him bar mitzvahed, that we do it at Barry's synagogue where they practice and do it on a Thursday morning. where basically you don't have to go through all the rigmarole. Basically handled by the rabbis. They're delighted to call someone up into the congregation to become a full-fledged member and be bar mitzvah. And that's the way we did it. And the Thursday that it wound up was Thanksgiving. So we went back to my sister-in-law's house afterwards and had Thanksgiving dinner, which functioned as the party for David. So he was bar mitzvahed Orthodox, but he, you know.
You mean, it was easier to be bar mitzvahed Orthodox than conservative?
It was, yes. And it was because of the Asperger's that David was afflicted
with. But an easier process for anyone.
Yeah, well, it was wonderful. I mean, the women sit in the back behind a screen. A few of us, I was called up. A few of others were called up as well. But the rabbis handled the whole thing. They read the Torah. They did the speech. They did all of that sort of stuff.
Did he have to make a speech afterwards?
No, just basically be there.
Mm. So, the thing I found interesting with some Jewish religious ceremonies is how they can draw in so many of the congregation to participate. Now, that might just be certain synagogues in their approach. But.
Well, I mean, basically, depending upon the holiday or what they're celebrating, or even just Saturday services, you know, if you feel the desire to participate, it's easy. It's easy to do. There are sections to be read. There are prayers to be said, prayers to be read. My brother-in-law, Barry, is a Kohen. He's
a Kohen,
which means that he is kind of a member of the temple elite. And certain things are, during certain observances, within the Jewish religion, Kohanes are called up to deliver the prayers for the congregation. And I'm just basically an Israelite, a Levite. None of my family have been honored. They're not Kohanes. But my brother-in-law is. And all my brother-in-laws, in one way or another, are practicing Kohens. It's very special.
Yeah. I wonder if now it's like with the Islamic people, now there's a move more, even maybe countries where they were fairly often quite westernized, like in the Middle East, and yet in recent years they've become more I suppose stronger in their belief and following customs. And I've got a cousin who was brought up not in a particularly religious way at all, but she and her children and their partners and her grandchildren are now very strongly religious Orthodox Jews. So I don't know if it's just something globally where, you know, maybe a counter to the increasing secularism that was coming through in the 60s and 70s. Now there's a
Could well be. I'm not sure why the trend exists, but yes, I think it goes through cycles.
Yeah,
and that if there's a, you know, if people have a good experience at their synagogue or temple, they might say, well, I'll do more on behalf of my family or on behalf of the community, etc. I mean, one of the things you can do if you're a woman is take training to prepare the dead for burial, the mikveh, to bathe and clothe the dead for burial. And that's very special training, and only people who are wanting to do that are trained in that area. But it's a very special part of community work.
Well, now there's also, was there a female Jewish, a female rabbi up in Auckland?
Well, there have been female rabbis for I don't know how many years, but yes, we hired a female rabbi several times down at in Wellington at Temple Sinai, basically one of the things, because the temple is so small, it doesn't have a great amount of money. And for the most part, when we can hire a rabbi, it's a rabbi who wants to travel and see the world. And so the temple puts them up in a house or an apartment, and they basically run services and travel to the outlying areas and do services as well. The traveling rabbis, we've had rabbis from Australia come over and spend the high holidays with us. And conversely, we have people within Temple Sinai who are lay readers, but so well-versed that they themselves have been asked to go down to, say, Dunedin and perform the religious holidays at the small congregations that exist in Christchurch, Dunedin. When they're back here, they're doing services. We don't need a rabbi. We've got people who are the equivalent of rabbis, and it's great.
So would you feel, say, in a place like Palmerston North or the Manawatu, Jewish people can feel they're still part of a Jewish community, or they tend to drop off?
What has happened in my experience over the last 28 years of being here is that the young kids that we used to celebrate Purim with in March have grown up, gone to university, have moved on, gotten jobs elsewhere in the world, or married, etc. So they're not in the community anymore. And those folks who were 70 when we moved here are now 95 don't get out at night, etc. But we'll make an effort to get to services when we hold them locally. But the desire to have a congregation would be nice. There's just not enough of us to afford it. And apparently there's never been enough.
Any idea on numbers?
Pardon?
Any idea on numbers? I suppose there'd be quite a few linked to the university.
Well, that's another whole area, because there are people of Jewish persuasion who come in and ask what's going on, what's the Jewish community doing. Now, for instance, my name is on the CAB listing for contact, so that if somebody wants to know what's going on in the Jewish community, connect with the Jewish community. Yeah. And this includes not only professors that come to Massey and doctors that come and work 6 months or a year, etc. If they're interested in what's going on in the Jewish community, they give me a call and I give them the rundown. But fewer and fewer over the years.
I know we've had some Israeli academics come and stay here for a short time.
Yes.
They've been able to make contact with you, haven't
they? Absolutely. Probably she left maybe 2 years ago now. But Israelis who are certainly interested in what goes on in the Jewish community make contact.
Yeah.
And then we sometimes rely on their expertise to teach us and share with us.
Yeah.
You know, if they read Hebrew or can tell us what goes on in Israel.
Well, they'll be able to read Hebrew.
We have meetings in homes and celebrate the family festivals.
How do you regard non-Jewish or Jewish and non-Jewish marrying? How does that go?
Obviously, not been a problem since biblical times. I think it happens. Love conquers all, regardless of your personal religious persuasion.
I have a friend who married a really neat guy in Wellington. He was a Jew, and she changed.
Yeah, well, there are folks who, if they love someone, they might convert. This is more often a woman marrying a Jewish man. They will take training from the rabbi and convert. A good friend of ours who has a business here in town, his daughter felt somewhere in the back of her mind that there was a Jewish connection. And her parents weren't Jewish, but she went through the training and is today a full-fledged member of the congregation. And we have a number of those people within Temple Sinai who have, their grandmother may have been Jewish, and they felt it was a tie they wanted to follow, and so they have taken the training and converted.
Oh, if they do the DNA test, it will probably show up.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes they are more of a force in the congregation than the rest of us. They want to see things, you know, done right. So it's wonderful. We Temple Sinai particularly welcomes those folks because they're a strong part of the community and help us in our practice of our religion. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.